And the mysteries continue. Up next, Dina West Budd joins us, the Wiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dina West Budd writes weekly articles for BellaOnline.com as their paranormal editor. And she's been working in radio for many years, hosts a morning show on KHBL, which is up there in Hannibal, Missouri. It's 96.9 on your dial. And here's Dina as we talk on cryptozoology. Hey, Dina, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm so honored and thrilled to be with you tonight. How are you?
This is going to be fun. Now, I have to ask you this. Is this a play on words? Because your book is called The Wiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology. Your last name is Budd. If I run that really fast, it's Budweiser.
That's true.
You didn't plan that, did you?
No, didn't plan that at all.
Just happened. And anyway, tell me a little bit about your interest in the paranormal and cryptozoology.
Well, I've always been interested in the paranormal since I was a kid, you know, and I'd rush home after school every afternoon to watch Dark Shadows with Barnabas Collins and Angelique the Witch. I just loved that show. And then, of course, when we were kids, we used to do seances all the time, and we even used the Ouija board. I received that as a gift for a Christmas present when I was a kid, and it really seemed much less frightening back then than it does now. I wouldn't recommend it now, but we used to do all those things as a kid, and I just the interest just grew as I grew up.
Well, good for you. And, you know, you're not too far from me. I'm broadcasting in St. Louis right now, and you're in Hannibal, Missouri. I've
That's
got
right,
some dear friends who work in Hannibal. One's an ophthalmologist. He just loves it out there. How'd you get up in that area?
Well, I was actually born in Hannibal. I moved away when I was older and got married and lived all over the country and moved back here when my kids were little. Thought it was a good little town for them to grow up in, and I've remained here since, even though my kids are grown now and they're no longer here. My daughter's in Albuquerque. My son is actually in Columbia. He just got out of the Marines about a year ago, and he's going to school in Columbia, Missouri.
One of the reasons I come back to St. Louis so often is just because of that. My kids are here and my grandchildren, and, you know, you got to see them as often as you can. So the luxury of radio right now, you're able to do that. You know, we can set up and broadcast out of New York, L.A., you name it. That's where we go, and St. Louis
is wonderful.
One spot.
Yeah.
So that works. But then if you're ever in St. Louis, you got to come down to one of our events that we have in this area. There's all kinds of paranormal events. You'd have a kick doing that.
No, I would. I would enjoy that very much. I've actually spent the night at Lent Mansion one time a few years ago. My daughter and I, we had the entire mansion to ourselves. It was so cool because after the restaurant staff went home, there was no one else there, just us. And we got to explore with our flashlights. And we set up, you know, to record all through the night. But nothing happened. Not one thing happened to us.
There were three suicides at the Lent Mansion over time. It was a brewery family. They are big into the beer business, and they have, as you know, parties there and events on a regular basis, and Halloween is always very special for them. But there were a group of people there having dinner there one night, and one guy was loud and boisterous, and he didn't believe in anything. He was making fun of the people who had committed suicide, and he had his hands underneath the dinner table. You know, he's kind of like had him on the side of his legs and stuff. And when he took his hands out because he was going to start eating, his hands were a half inch thick of butter. And
oh my goodness.
I mean, and it's not like it was under the table and somebody did that to him. He had no idea how that happened to him. He changed his whole views about that place.
I bet he did.
Yeah, he felt that they were out to get him, and he was going to mind his P's and Q's.
That's probably very wise of him.
Yep. Speaking of wise, tell me about the Wiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology.
Well, it is actually a little book about 40 different cryptids. It was very difficult for me to choose which cryptids I wanted to use because there are so many and each of them are so unique and interesting, but I chose these 40, and it's it has a large section in the back of where to go for more information. It has a description of each cryptid, the sightings, the first and most recent sightings, how and where to locate the creatures, and it's just a fun little book that I wrote to kind of help a person who wants to go cryptid hunting, kind of is a guide for that.
Tell me about some of those frightening or fascinating cryptids.
Well, of course, the rods are the most fascinating to me. I know you've had Mr. Escamilla on your show,
yes.
And I just think that they're amazing. I had seen a documentary when I was much younger, and I'd only see part of it, and I thought maybe I had imagined the whole thing because I never saw any more information about rods anywhere. And of course, this was before computers and the web and all that. Well, so then when I realized that these actually did exist, I was happy to know I hadn't just imagined the whole thing. I just think they're fascinating. These are creatures that undulate through the air. Usually at too fast to be perceived by the human eye, although Mr. Escamilla believes that you can train your eyes to see these rods. I have an opportunity to go sky fishing, actually, in Joplin, Missouri, coming up this fall, so I'm really looking forward to that.
In Joplin, you've got Joplin lights out that way, too, don't you? Something
yes,
strange happening?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the rods are bizarre. I mean, they're... They, if they exist, are probably, flying creatures. They look like little worms with fins.
Right.
And, I mean, just strange, strange creatures. I just wonder how many people, have you ever, swallowed an insect when you were talking?
Yeah.
Or something? I wonder how many people have been zapped by a rod like that or something.
Well, didn't Mr. Escamilla talk about a girl singing at a wedding and one flew into her mouth and didn't he say something about she was seen to actually pull it out of her mouth?
Or it popped out or it hit her face or something like that?
Something like that, yes. Yes. But I don't know. I'd rather not know if one was going down my throat. I'd rather not know it was there, I think.
Now are the 40 cryptids primarily from the Midwest or are they from all over the place?
From all over the world.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the frightening ones.
Okay.
How do you list those?
Well, some of the more frightening ones to me, of course, would be the werewolves and the shadow people. The Lugaroos vampires, they are frightening of the West Indies. One time, I know you've heard of sleep paralysis and the old
and
hag.
And the old hag, yeah.
Yes. Well, that happened to me one time when I was at work. I worked at a shelter for victims of domestic violence, and I worked overnight. So if nothing was going on, we were allowed to lay down and rest or sleep or whatever. And that happened to me. I felt like... That old hag was there, and I was totally paralyzed. I couldn't move anything, and I kept trying to concentrate on moving just even my finger, just a slight amount, and I couldn't for the longest time, and I felt like, she was there watching me, and I just think that was a very frightening experience.
What is it about the nighttime, though, Dina, that, creatures like this, the old hag, werewolf, shadow people, vampires, everything's nighttime. You never get these spooky stories during the day. How come?
Well, I guess because they can hide easier in the night. Nighttime has always been more frightening. When I was a kid, I was always scared of the dark. Ever since I watched the movie the original Night of the Living Dead, I was so terrified. I would have to wake up my sister to go with me to the bathroom at night. I was just sure those zombies were going to be on the other side of that sliding glass door trying to get in to eat me, And I used to be afraid that there'd be something underneath my bed that wanted to cut. I had long hair, and I was always afraid something was going to try to cut my hair off in the night. I just think the nighttime is a frightening time. How do you feel about that?
Well, it is. It's just, it's so surreal. But, even Hollywood, even authors, for example, vampires come out at night. They don't come out during the daytime and things. I've got a friend who lives in St. Louis. You could swear the guy looks like Count Dracula. Now, anybody in St. Louis who knows me and they're listening, they know who I'm talking about. I mean, absolutely identical. And now he's beginning to talk like him. I mean, he even a couple nights ago was talking to some people, and he said, "The undead need entertainment too." I mean, he sounds just like him. And it's strange. But back to some of these other creatures. How many shadow people stories did you investigate, or what do you think of shadow people?
Well, those are one of the more frightening cryptids, I think, you know, because of the feeling of dread that they can cause, because of, you know, the world is a scary place now as it is, and I think it's very difficult to remain positive. It seems like there's so much negative energy out there, and to think of that there's a creature that can actually cause you to feel these negative feelings, that's very frightening to me. You know, it's something that can mess with your mind like that.
Well, we've had all kinds of stories. And next hour when we take phone calls with you, Dina, we'll probably get some more of people who have had absolutely bizarre experiences with shadow people. You investigated werewolves. So now, primarily, where did you get most of the cases from? Or where are these werewolf stories coming from?
Well, the werewolves, of course, are the contemporary werewolves and, you know, the Beast of Bray Road and those kinds of creatures. I would consider them werewolves. And, I mean, everyone's heard of the Beast of Bray Road, and that's in Wisconsin. And they've been sighted since, since 1936. And there were just a rash of reports starting in the late 1980s. They've been seen quite often since the 1980s.
And tell me more.
Well, more about werewolves.
Yeah.
Well, I know in 1992 there was a lady, Tammy Bray was her name, and she saw a beast that her husband had encountered, I think it was in, like, 1989. She was driving home from work one night around 10:30, and she just saw this wolfman walk right across the road in front of her. And, you know, he walked, he was strong in the front, but he was more slouchy and sloppy-like in the rear. I think that was such a funny description. And then during this time, there were a lot of horses that were found with their throats sliced open.
Have you had reports of people being harmed by these creatures anywhere?
Being frightened by these creatures, yes, definitely. You know, people have been frightened by these creatures. Have been and a lot of wild, you know, a lot of farm animals have been killed
and left behind.
Right.
But you haven't had stories of people being dragged away or anything like that?
No.
Taken out of their beds?
No.
Okay, what other cryptids are there?
Well, there's the goat man. There's all the giants, you know, the giant catfish, giant spiders, giant rabbits. And the Kentucky goblins, that's one of my favorite stories. Those two families, they were in a farmhouse. They saw a light go through the sky and land in a ravine behind their house, and then these little creatures came up and started attacking them in their farmhouse. There were two families staying there at the time. This was in 1955, and they just kept attacking the farmhouse. They weren't really hurting anyone, but it frightened the family enough that the men started shooting at these creatures until the women insisted that they stop, because it was the shooting that was scaring the children more than anything, I guess. But they were about 3 or 4 feet tall. They had kind of metallic-looking skin that glowed. They were humanoid, of course, and they were very slender. They had claws for hands and a long slit for a mouth. And they just kept attacking the house, just coming at the house over and over again. And the families went to, they piled in the car and went into town, and they got help. You know, they had the police come out there, and the media all came out there, and they couldn't find any creatures. They did see some signs that creatures had been there, but the creatures were gone. So the investigators and the media, they all left. And then these creatures came back and started attacking the house again. And until dawn, the creatures just kept attacking until dawn. And, you know, eventually the families moved out of the area because they got tired of being ribbed about the incident. You know, I just don't think that people would make these kinds of things up and you know, deal with that in their community, have to start all over somewhere else. A lot of people ask me, you know, well, you know, why people could just make this up. Well, why would they make it up? Why would they be making up these stories? I don't see how they would gain anything from it at all.
And you know, they then subject themselves to ridicule. So, you know, it something happened to them.
Yes.
You know, we don't know exactly what, but something did. Well, with all these cryptids that you put into the Wiser Field Guide, do you believe that they all exist, or are some of them myths? How did you categorize them?
Well, I do believe that some of them are myths, and some of them might have existed. I mean, some of them are legends that had to have been, you know, they had to originate somehow, like the Encantados, the Dolphin Men of Brazil, and the Clericons, that they are creatures that are similar to leprechauns that live in your cellar and guard your wine. You know, it's possible that these creatures no longer exist, but the cryptozoology, it is such a broad area. Cryptozoologists vary on their description of what cryptozoology is. You know, some people believe that it's just the hairy humanoids, and others include zombies and unicorns and fairies and werewolves and vampires. But the cryptozoologists vary on what they consider a cryptid to be.
Well, that's true, because some believe that, you know, they're paranormal investigators. Others believe that they are scientific investigators, you know, and some believe both.
Right,
I mean, they really do. So, you know, it's and I sometimes that it goes right down the middle. I think, for example, the Bigfoot stories we all hear. I think this creature is physical. I think it's real. I think it's you know, probably more so animal than human, but there's you know, there's that fine line there. There's that little link. But you know, then you get into the paranormal aspect of a lot of these, and
right. Yeah.
You know, and they happen. Would you call ghosts part of the cryptids? Probably not, I guess, right?
You know, that's funny you should ask that, because when I was walking my dog earlier this evening, I was thinking about that. We walked through a graveyard a lot, and I thought, you know, well, I would think they would have to be, because the definition of a cryptid is a creature not proven to exist by science, and a lot of scientists probably do not believe that ghosts exist. So I think they could be considered cryptids.
It's part of the definition. It's a long one, but it's part of it.
Yeah.
Do you often walk through cemeteries, Dina?
It's so peaceful. Yes, you know, I do. And at Halloween, I take milk duds and put them on the children's little gravestones. I know that's an odd thing, too.
but that's heartwarming, too, at the same time.
Well, thank you.
It is. And it's also sad. It's sad thinking about little children who have passed on like that.
Right, it is. It's heartbreaking, you know, to find whole sections where children died. Well, over here close to me, the cemetery has a lot of children died in the, you know, the 1917, 18, and through the 1920s. I don't know exactly. I'm sure you might know what was going on at that time. I don't know, some kind of...
It's always plagues. Sure. Always plagues.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something. Flus. I think that might have been the Spanish flu at that time.
Could very well have been, yeah.
You know, it's just a sad thing, but... Have you ever had a frightening experience in a cemetery?
Yes, I have. This very same cemetery, my dog and I were walking along, and I like to walk late at night. You know, I'm more afraid of traffic than I am of anything else. So we like to walk when there isn't any traffic. And it was around midnight. And I kind of talked to my dog like he's my friend, and I was just walking along singing or talking to him, and all of a sudden he rushed away from me and started barking at something, and I turned to look, and I'm like, well, what in the world are you? And then I saw this this tall gentleman dressed in all dark clothes, and he was just kind of leaning against one of the big headstones, just leaning there, and it frightened me. I started screaming, and then I realized that he was just kind of standing there all laid back, and so I stopped screaming and started laughing. You know, I said, well, you scared me, and I said, I'm not used to anyone being in the cemetery at night, and he said, well, you scared me too.
And then disappeared, right?
Yeah, he was kind of gone after that, but it was rather weird. I don't know if it was a human or not, but it was rather weird that he was just, the way he was leaning up against that headstone, I can't really describe it, but the way he was leaning up against it just seemed rather bizarre.
Well, they say cemeteries are some of the safest places, but I'm not sure. Stay with us. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take questions with Dina for the next half hour, and then the last hour, I want you to tell us your scary stories. You can tell we're starting to get close to Halloween. We'll be back. Absolutely. Floating format tonight. I kind of like those every once in a while. We'll be back with phone calls with Dina Westbud in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Dina, tell us about the website, BellaOnline.com.
Well, I'm the paranormal editor. It's an online magazine. I'm the paranormal editor. I write a different article every week, and all different areas of the paranormal, including cryptozoology. And you can check that out at BellaOnline.com/site/paranormal.
Super. And, you know, the subject matter, where do you get it? How do you get it? Do you have an editor? Do you chase them down yourself?
No, I do it all myself. I do it all myself. And it's all fun. Right. I enjoy it.
Of course it is. And you've been doing this since you were a kid almost, haven't you? Interest in the paranormal?
Yes. Yes. Just like you.
Yeah, I know it. It happens. Let's go to the phones. Driving in Nebraska. Cody, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Cody. Cody? Got to let you go. We're on a delay. You got to grab it fast. Miguel's turn, though, in Los Angeles. Hi, Miguel.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Good.
Well, I just wanted to share something. It's been several times, maybe like five times, that I'm sleeping. And it's those times where you're sleeping, but at the same time, your sleep is not really deep. But I've been feeling this presence getting on top of me. And at the same time, I feel this fear. And, I mean, it's a very scary feeling. And I try to wake up or get up. But I feel that presence is, like, holding me back. Like, it's like someone is feeding on top of my chest. And that's been, I mean, it's really weird because I don't know what it is, if it's some like a bad spirit or, you know, I don't really don't know. And it's been like at least five times that even one time I'm from Mexico City, and I went visit my family, and that happened over there too. I don't know if it's a bad spirit that is following me or
well, it could be the old hag syndrome, and you know what that is, Miguel, right?
No.
Okay, why don't you explain that, Dina, again, the old hag syndrome.
Well, the old hag is, she sits on your chest, and it just exactly as you described, it feels like you can't breathe and you cannot move. You know, they believe that she's responsible for a lot of cases of sleep paralysis.
Let's go to Cody in Nebraska. Go ahead, Cody. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and I enjoy seeing you on Ancient Aliens on the History Channel.
Ah, thanks, Cody.
I guess what I was calling about, interesting about cryptozoology, I have a degree in psychology, and I have a minor in anthropology. And I study a lot about cultures, you know, everywhere across the world and as well in, you know, the United States. And it seems kind of like the last guest kind of talked about that. There's a theme, it seems, like a cultural theme with, you know, unexplained creatures, you know, like Chupacabra, the Mothman, that kind of centers around, like, almost creation theory and the current, you know, phenomenon in the area that is related to how they explain the unexplained with these creatures. And I was wondering if you've kind of seen this as well.
In your investigating, Dina, do you come across stuff like that?
I'm not exactly sure what he's asking. I'm sorry.
I'm asking, like, do you find more of a parallel between the cultures and their religions and their local mythology and the actual creatures involved? Like, for instance, the chupacabra, goats have been around and domesticated in Mexico for quite some time. And no.
Right. Yes, with some of the creatures, definitely. Definitely.
And what, like, I guess, what other evidence have, besides outside of the culture, that I guess reinforces, I guess, your belief or people's belief in these creatures?
I'm sorry. What
about shamans, Dina?
What about shamans?
Yeah, I mean, have you come across their belief systems of the paranormal and the supernatural?
Well, now with the moas, the giant flightless birds, and with the you know, with the story about the Thunderbirds, the Piazza, those sorts of creatures, definitely the Native Americans, they have a lot of stories and legends concerning these creatures.
Well, you know, one of the best Thunderbird stories I've ever heard is when it tried to swoop down and pick up a little boy, and the mother came out with a broomstick and hit him on his feet, on the legs, and the bird dropped the little kid.
Right, he carried him. It was Marlin Lowe, not too far from here in Lawndale, Illinois. The bird carried him about 40 feet.
Ugh. Can you imagine seeing that happen to your kid?
No, I cannot. That would be awful.
Oh,
I can't imagine. Talk about
nightmares. I mean, forever. Let's go to Universal City in California. John's with us. Hi, John. Good morning.
Hey, George. I just had a quick question to your guest, whether or not she had done any of the investigation into Skinwalker Ranch. I know you mentioned shaman a little bit, and some people talk about maybe it being a shaman, but maybe a skinwalker or any type of creature involved in that, maybe?
Did you do that at all, Dina?
I have read a little bit, but no, not so much for research for this book.
Okay. It's, you know, you were going through some of the cryptids. Give us some more of them, because we only took care of about four of them.
Okay. Well, of course, Spring-Heeled Jack and the Mothman of West Virginia, the New Jersey Devil, the Chupacabra, the we mentioned the Shadow People and the Black Dogs and the Japanese River Imp. The Frogmen of Loveland, the Flying Man of Falls City, Nebraska, and other flying humanoids, the Bunyips, the Tommyknockers of California, the Giant Kangaroos, the Beast of Busco, a giant turtle, the Awful. That's a creature that H.P. Lovecraft actually investigated and modeled some of his monsters in his books after.
Do you ever get cases of doppelgangers? People ever tell you about those?
Oh, yes. Isn't that a fascinating
yep.
idea? Yes.
I would call them cryptids. I mean, even though they may
sure.
be duplicates of us, you know, who knows what they are?
Right. I would call them cryptids also.
Tell me about the Flying Man story. What the heck is that?
Well, you know, that's an interesting story because the sightings are so varied. The creatures, sometimes they're men seen with flying apparatuses attached to them. And then, of course, sometimes these flying men or women are seen with wings. So I think that they're probably different kinds of cryptids, to be honest with you. You know, I think possibly some could be aliens, and some with the wings might perhaps be more angels or even demons, maybe.
Okay, next up we go to Orange County in California. First-time caller. Hey, Lee, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Dina.
How are you?
Very good, very good. Hey, I just have a quick question. If either of you two had heard of this thing that I saw once or twice, actually, in the woods in Connecticut. And what I saw, I was hunting one day, and I see this creature, like, 75 yards in front of me through the trees. And at first, I thought it was just someone riding on horseback because it was so tall, and that was pretty common back there. But as I looked a little harder, I could tell it was just one creature, and it was standing upright like a person. And there was many trees passing between me and it, and eventually it just disappeared behind one of the trees. And I never told anyone the story, and I chalked it up to it being just my eyes playing tricks on me. Until I saw it a second time about 2 miles away, but in the same patch of woods. And this time it was much closer, and I could see it much more clear, and it was walking towards me, but not in like an evil way, and it didn't feel evil, but I could see it was completely jet black, and it was, I don't know, 7-8 feet tall or so, and walking on two legs. But I don't know if it would be a ghost or a demon or a Bigfoot, because I couldn't tell if it had fur. It was so black I couldn't make out detail.
Right. It sounds more like a Bigfoot-type creature to me.
I was going to say the same thing.
I mean, that Bigfoot has been sighted all over the world by so many different people, and he's named, you know, he's in Ohio, they have the Ohio Grassman. I believe he's a type of Bigfoot creature also. And I have no doubt of its existence because there are too many reports of sightings of Bigfoot in too many different places for so many, you know, hundreds of years. Wouldn't you agree with that, George?
I interviewed, Dina, a dentist years ago who saw Bigfoot with his family. He was so shaken up. And, I mean, he was close. I mean, there's no way, one, the guy's making the story up, and there's no way he has misidentified whatever he has seen. And he ended up going on Good Morning America. He was on our program. And, I mean, you could tell how shaken up he was.
Right. So many reputable people, you know, you can't doubt their sightings. You can't doubt what they're saying when these are reputable people that are taking their reputations in their own hands when they come forward with this information. They very bravely come forward with it.
Now, how about you? I mean, has your career in the paranormal helped you or hurt you?
People have always known, I've never tried to hide my interest in the paranormal. So everyone knows that that's something that I've had a passion for all my life. So I don't think that it's made any impact, really. I guess I would have to say it's helped me. I think that more people are interested in what I have to say. So I would have to say that it's been a positive thing.
Let's go to Thomas, who's in Florida on Coast to Coast. Hey, Thomas, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Deanna, one of the profound questions of any person that says that, well, there may or may not be such a thing is to capture something, or to capture it, to put it, or display it, or make it known and positively prove it. Not to dismiss it, make it a display. Do you feel that perhaps things have been caught or may or may not have been disclosed or properly disseminated to the world?
Well, I certainly believe that with everyone having little cameras on their phones now, I think it's going to be possible to catch more and more images of these creatures.
Why is it that even in the past, I mean, phones have been out there long enough, and there's been a lot of other things, but there's never really been any solid evidence of anything so far as from a UFO, an extraterrestrial, to be displayed, to be made public? And
well, I think it's hidden a lot. I think there are agencies out there that try to cover things up, keep information from us.
Why?
I think George could probably answer that better than me.
Tossing it to me, are you, Gina?
George.
You're the guest.
This is the gut level.
But you have interviewed so many people about this very subject.
This is the gut level.
Well, and Thomas, you know, you bring up probably one of the biggest questions that comes up so often from people who are skeptics, not necessarily debunkers, but people who just say, look, I want the proof. I want to see a body of Bigfoot. I want to see a mermaid. I want to see an extraterrestrial. I want to know that there's life beyond death. Somebody's got to prove it to me. But, you know, when you deal with the paranormal, you're also dealing with aspects of our own existence that are very, very difficult to explain. You know, I wonder how many people, for example, have found a carcass of a bear. We know they've died, right, out in the woods, but I don't think I've ever heard of a story of somebody who said, you know, I found the carcass of a bear. They've seen bears. They've shot at bears. But, you know, it's just that way. I don't think it's that easy to have a Bigfoot creature and capture it. I don't think it's that easy to have an ET body and capture it. So, you know, right now we're dealing with a lot on faith and on belief. And sure, some of these things may not exist, but I just think that people are seeing too many strange things and something's got to be going on out there. Let's go to Bellevue, Washington. Chris, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hey, George and Dina.
Hey.
Hi. Interesting following on the last caller. He may find something that I've been studying, the Urantia book, of some interest. They discuss a lot of different things in the evolutionary world, and exactly what I've been reading is the faith that we are a world of faith sons and so the lower mortal levels. But the reason I bring that up is because when they talk about evolution, they discuss that kangaroos actually hopped, or rather the dinosaurs hopped like kangaroos to push down all the sediment, and that on a lot of evolutionary worlds, that's sort of how it needs to happen, is large animals first, and they kind of need to over millions of years. And so it piqued my interest when you mentioned the giant kangaroos. Do we have time for you to mention or talk about that briefly?
Could you imagine, though, a brontosaurus hopping?
I know. The whole earth would be shaking. I'd love to talk about
the arms and the similar back legs, you know, if you look at the photos.
Right. Yeah. Well, the giant kangaroos, they were first seen in 1973 in Enfield, Illinois. And Mr. and Mrs. McDaniel, they got home one evening, and their children were all excited and scared because they had seen something scratching at the door that looked like a kangaroo. And later on that evening, the father opened the door to find a grayish creature about 5 feet tall. He had a short trunk, three legs, and two short little arms extending out of its chest, and two huge pink eyes right there at the door. And I don't know why he was frightened, but he shot at the creature several times, and it kind of bounded away, and it was hissing, and it was leaping in 50 to 75 feet leaps, and it disappeared along some railroad tracks. And then a little bit later, some state troopers found some tracks of this creature, and they also learned that a child that had been playing behind the McDaniel home had had kind of been mildly attacked by this creature. It stepped on the boy's feet.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, kangaroos are pretty tough animals. You know, they box and stuff like that. You ever see one mad?
I have seen footage of one angry, yes.
I mean, they are tough little creatures indeed.
That would be something to open up your front door and see a kangaroo standing there. I don't know what.
By the way, I'd be remiss. Where do you get your book, The Wiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology?
Anywhere books are sold, and you can also get it on Amazon.
Amazon's got everything these days, huh?
It's great. You don't even have to leave your house.
Let's go to Joe in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Go ahead, Joe. You're up.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about this thing that I saw when I was a kid. I was just trying to figure out what it was. I used to go play out in the country, you know, and just go wander out in the country sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I took this dog with me, and it got too late, so I thought, well, I should just walk in town instead of walking back to my grandpa's place. But I got caught in the darkness, and I was walking up the final hill just to kind of that gets into town. It's a small town. When I was walking up, I saw this, pole thing. It had to have been, about 6 or 7 feet tall. And I had never noticed it there before because I'd walked through there before. And I just thought it was weird. So I just started walking towards it. And the dog, keep in mind, is in front of me. When I took a couple steps towards it, it just kind of, disappeared at the blink of an eye. And it went from above the hill down to, the valley of the hill. With just a flat second, and it
so it did materialize someplace else.
Yeah, well, it moved so fast. I think is what it was. It didn't dematerialize. It just moved so fast that my eyes didn't recognize it, or didn't catch on.
I've never heard of that one before. I don't know what kind of a creature, Joe, that was, but it was definitely something. Dina West Budd has been our guest in our floating format, the author of The Wiser Field Guide to Cryptozoology. Up next, I want you to hit me with your scariest story. If it's not scary, don't call. I'll be back.